It's 1962, and in the Canadian Rockies, American climbers Yvon Chouinard and Doug Tompkins are taking on a formidable challenge, the north face of Mount Temple. At 11,600 feet, the mountain towers over Lake Louise. The north face is its coldest, iciest, and most unforgiving side. And that's exactly why Chouinard and Tompkins want to conquer it. Tompkins stretches his arm over his head and grabs the ledge above. He tightens his grip and starts probing with his right leg for a foothold. But the moment he finds his target, Chouinard shouts at him from below.
Rock!
Tompkins immediately presses his body against the mountain's hard rock face. A split second later, a football-sized lump of limestone hurtles past him, headed for the valley floor several thousand feet below. After two more hours of treacherous climbing, Tompkins and Chouinard stop for the night and pitch their tent on a snowy ledge halfway up the mountain. This might be their first climb together, but from the moment they met, it was clear they were kindred spirits. Both of them loved being outdoors, living free and off the grid. They called themselves dirtbags, climber slang for adventurers devoted to scaling mountains. They lie in their sleeping bags, exhausted and about to drop off, when Chouinard suddenly sits up.
You hear that? The wind's picking up.
The two open the front of the tent and peer out into the moonlit sky. In the distance, they can see a storm, and it's heading right for them. Tompkins gulps.
Not good, not good. We need to get out of here.
He's right. Their tent is on an exposed ledge that's vulnerable to avalanches. They've got to get off this mountain before the storm hits. They race to pack their tent and begin their escape. They take turns leading the dark descent, relying completely on each other to find a safe route down. They know that just one mistake could be fatal. Rock crumbles beneath their feet. Stiff, cold wind blasts their faces. Thunder rumbles ever closer. The cotton shirts under their jackets grow damp with sweat. Finally, as the sun begins to rise, the spent duo reach the foot of the mountain. They fail to conquer the north face, but they've made it out alive. The close call deepens their bond, a bond between two climbers who will soon turn their dirtbag lifestyles into rival businesses. Patagonia and the North Face, two companies that will turn mountain gear into everyday wear while also challenging the very way business is done. Tools and Weapons is a podcast exploring the promise and the peril of the digital age, hosted by Microsoft's vice chair and president, Brad Smith. His latest guest is Bayer CEO Bill Anderson. Though many of us know Bayer for its pharmaceuticals, they're also focused on crop science with the goal of making sure no one on planet Earth goes hungry. On Tools and Weapons, Brad and Bill talk about how the German company is using artificial intelligence paired with CRISPR technology to increase food production without fertilizers. Their efforts put AI and digital tools in the hands of farmers to get the most out of every acre on a hotter, more crowded planet. It's the latest conversation in a series that invites listeners to pull up a front row seat to some of the most important developments in technology today. You can check out this episode and a whole lot more of Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith wherever you get your podcasts.
If you travel for work, you know to pack two suits, business and swim. You know, with your Delta SkyMiles Business Amex card, buying that plane ticket for a business trip can get you closer to medallion status. You know that a meeting in Montana means visiting almost every national park.
Yellowstone? Check.
Because you're the chief excursion officer. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/business.
From Wondery, I'm David Brown, and this is Business Wars.
In our new series, we follow the trail blazed by two of the biggest names in outdoor apparel, the North Face and Patagonia. Today, these giants of outdoor attire boast combined revenues of nearly $4 billion a year, and their clothes are as common on city streets as mountain slopes. But their story is about way more than dollars earned. It's also the story of two companies with shared roots and their battle to stay true to the values they were founded on. But when these two companies took their first steps in the 1960s, mountaineering was a niche hobby. No one imagined mountain wear would become a fashion staple. The outdoor industry was run by people who just wanted to make enough scratch to fund their next expedition. This is Episode 1, Dirtbags. It's 1964, and Doug Tompkins fumbles for change in a telephone booth in downtown San Francisco. He pops a dime into the slot, dials the operator, and asks to be connected with Yvonne Chouinard's home in Burbank, California.
Connecting you now, sir.
Tompkins drums his fingers and mutters to himself, "Please be home. Please be home. Please be home."
Chouinard residence. Yvonne speaking.
Yvonne, I'm on a payphone, so I can't talk long, but I'm starting a business, a mail-order business, selling high-quality climbing and hiking gear. It's going to sell everything serious outdoorsmen need so people can get everything they want in one place.
Yeah, sounds cool. What are you calling it?
The North Face. Seemed appropriate after Mount Temple.
Good name.
But Tompkins wants more than Chouinard's approval. He needs products for the North Face to sell. And for that, he needs Chouinard. You see, Chouinard's not just a climber. He's also a blacksmith. Back in 1957, he bought a second-hand hammer and anvil, and ever since, he's been making and selling climbing pitons. Pitons are the pegs climbers hammer into rock faces to support their ascents. Most pitons are made from soft iron, which means they break if pulled out of the rock. But Chouinard's pitons are different. He makes his from steel. And because they're steel, they're strong enough to reuse. Chouinard's been selling them on a small scale, but now Tompkins wants his new retail venture to stock them.
So I wanted to ask, will you sell me your pitons at a wholesale price so I can put them in our catalog?
Sure. How many do you need?
I'm thinking maybe if we went...
Sir, this is the operator. Your 3 minutes are up.
Ah, damn, my money's run out. Yvonne, I'll mail you our first order. Bye.
But Tompkins isn't the only one about to turn his love of climbing into a paycheck. And that's because Chouinard's transforming his piton-making sideline into a proper business. It's 1965, and in Ventura, California, a craggy-faced landlord unlocks the padlock on a chain fence gate and pulls it aside. He turns to Yvonne Chouinard and his climbing pal, Tom Frost, and beckons them inside.
This way.
The two climbers follow the landlord through the grounds of a now-abandoned slaughterhouse. Chouinard and Frost are here searching for a home for their new business, Chouinard Equipment. Last fall, they wowed the tight-knit climbing world by making the first ascent of the near-vertical North American Wall of El Capitan in Yosemite. And ever since, there's been a rising tide of climbers mailing Chouinard with orders for his steel pitons. So now, Chouinard and Frost are out to tap into that demand by starting a business that designs, makes, and sells pitons and other climbing hardware. They're not after riches. They just want a few more dollars to fund their climbing trips. They also want to be based somewhere where they can lay down their tools and head to the beach whenever the surf's up. This sleepy beachside town is perfect. They both stomp through the premises after the landlord. Chouinard's a short, muscular guy with a determined look on his face. Frost follows behind. He's beanpole thin, with a crew cut that accentuates his ears. The landlord leads them to the ramshackle building that used to be the slaughterhouse boiler room. It's about the size of a small store and made out of corrugated tin.
"Well, boys, here it is. Like I told you, it ain't much, but it's cheap."
Chouinard and Frost step inside the tin shed. It's gloomy, it's small, the roof probably leaks, and the ground's uneven.
And it's exactly what they're looking for. A dirtbag home for a dirtbag company. Within weeks, Chouinard's moved his blacksmith gear into the shed and Chouinard Equipment is in business. Not that Chouinard considers himself an entrepreneur. He sees himself as a craftsman, an artisan who makes climbing equipment the traditional way, with a hammer and an anvil. It's like the Industrial Revolution never happened. All the same, Chouinard's timing is spot on. In the mid-60s, climbing is still a niche hobby, but it's growing. More and more people are looking to reconnect with nature by heading outdoors to hike and climb. Nowhere is that trend more evident than in the San Francisco Bay Area. And that's inspired Chouinard's buddy, Doug Tompkins, to move the North Face from a mail-order operation run from his kitchen table and into brick and mortar. It's October 1966, and in San Francisco's North Beach neighborhood, an opening party for the North Face store is underway. This store might be new to this bohemian corner of the city, but it fits right in with the radical bookstores, beat poets, and strip joints that define it. In the North Face's window is a huge poster of Bob Dylan. At the door, two Hell's Angels stand glowering in sleeveless denim shirts. Inside, a hot new local band is playing live. They call themselves the Grateful Dead. As women in flowing gypsy-style dresses and beatnik guys in roll-neck jumpers sway to the music, Doug Tompkins hands out glasses of wine. He's having a great time, even though no one's paying attention to the sleeping bags, tents, pitons, and ropes on display. But he wouldn't have it any other way. You see, just like Yvon Chouinard's climbing hardware business, Tompkins didn't start the North Face to get rich. For him, it's about embracing the outdoors lifestyle. And for Tompkins, that lifestyle always comes first. It's spring 1967, and in the North Face store, a customer is checking out the store's sleeping bags while Tompkins watches the clock from behind the counter. Work days seem to last forever.
Excuse me, I'm going climbing in Castle Rock, Colorado, and I need a new bag. Which do you recommend?
Tompkins looks at the customer with envy. Since opening the store, he's spending more time helping others pick out climbing gear than scaling mountains himself.
Well, for maximum warmth, you want to go with the Model 200. If you want lightweight, it's the Model 100. Thanks. I'll take the 100. It's going to be a great trip. We're thinking of doing the athlete's feet route. You know, the one Royal Robbins did.
The North Face founder zones out as the customer jabbers away. This isn't the way it was supposed to be. The store was supposed to subsidize a life of climbing. Instead, it's just become a job. Something's got to change. And then he has an idea that makes a smile creep across his face. It's time to dump the North Face. A few weeks later, Tompkins sells his store to two brothers for $50,000. Not bad for a one-store business that's struggling to break even. The brothers open two more North Face stores in the Bay Area, only to find they can't cover the costs. The demand just isn't there. America's yet to discover its passion for outdoor sports. A year later, after losing $60,000, the company's up for sale again. And in May 1968, they find a buyer, an ambitious Stanford MBA named Hap Klopp. He pays $60,000 for the North Face. This former high school quarterback's got a plan that will transform the North Face from just another dirtbag outdoor store into the flag bearer of a new industry. But while the North Face's new owner is settling in, the company's founder is enjoying his return to dirtbag life. It's June 1968, and Tompkins is spending the day with Chouinard surfing on Ventura Beach. Tompkins squats down on the board as seawater sprays his tanned torso. He rides the wave to the shore, puts his board under his arm, and jogs across the warm golden sand to where Chouinard is sitting. Chouinard barely acknowledges his return. He's too engrossed in the book he's reading. Tompkins flops onto the beach towel next to Chouinard, rolls on his back, and puts his hands behind his head to look up at the blue sky.
What's that you're reading, Yvonne?
Conquerors of the Useless by Lionel Terre. It tells the story of how he made the first ascent of Mount Fitzroy in Patagonia back in 52. He says it was his greatest and toughest climb. Fitzroy's only been climbed one time since then. The mention of Patagonia brings a smile to Tompkins' lips. He went to that vast, mysterious Argentine wilderness a few years back.
Patagonia is amazing, Yvonne. You'd love it. What a challenge Fitzroy would be. That's a great idea. We could drive the whole way, make it a real adventure. You know, surf in Mexico, ski in Chile, eat the local foods, drink the local spirits. Yeah, that too. We could also film it, make a movie out of it. We'll need, what, 6 months?
The smile on Chouinard's face vanishes.
Doug, I've got responsibilities now, a business to run. And you've got a kid.
The two go quiet, annoyed by reality's intrusion on their daydreaming. But they're thinking the same thing. Screw business. Screw responsibility. Tompkins is the first one in the water.
We're gonna do this, right?
Yeah, we are.
They are adventurers, dirtbags. And responsibilities? Well, they're just another obstacle to overcome. By sunset, their minds are made up. They're leaving for Patagonia. And it's going to be the adventure of a lifetime. An adventure that will transform them. And in time, the world of fashion.
You know, Audible has a brand new collection of exclusive thrillers. Every move is made more exciting by captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances. I just downloaded The Grand Opening by Carl Weber. It's a mystery about a family business in a small southern town, and there are secrets around every turn. You know, when I'm listening, the time just disappears, getting completely immersed in the story and the performances. And as an Audible member, you get to keep one title a month from their entire catalog, including bestsellers and new releases. So come on, listen along. New members can try Audible now free for 30 days. Head on over to audible.com/BW or just text BW to 500-500. That's audible.com/BW or text BW to 500-500 to try Audible free for 30 days.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
It's July 1968, and in Ventura, California, Doug Tompkins and Yvonne Chouinard are loading the final batch of supplies into a grubby, cream-colored Ford Econoline van. It's been a busy couple of weeks since they dreamt up their plan to go to Patagonia. Chouinard's persuaded his business partner, Tom Frost, to run Chouinard equipment in his absence. They've also recruited two pals to join them on their six-month trip and christened their gang the Fun Hogs. After packing the van with food, skis, clothes, reels of film, tents, and sleeping bags, they strap their surfboards to the roof. Tompkins checks the handwritten list of supplies and equipment.
Yep, that's everything. We're ready to roll.
Just then, Tompkins' wife, Susie, reaches into her bag and pulls out a red bedsheet.
One more thing. This.
Tompkins unfurls the bedsheet and grins. Painted in big white letters on the sheet are the words, Viva los Fun Hogs. After Tompkins kisses his wife and baby daughter goodbye, the Fun Hogs pile into the van, start the engine, and head south. A week later, they're surfing in Mexico. In Guatemala, they get questioned at gunpoint by soldiers who think they're CIA agents. in Costa Rica, an erupting volcano forces them to flee at high speed as ash rains down and turns their surfboards black. In Peru, they ski sand dunes the size of hills before heading to Chile to carve the powder on a snow-covered volcano. Then, it's on to Patagonia, where civilization vanishes in the rearview mirror, and the road fades into rocks and weeds. Soon, the gnarly 11,000-foot summit of Mount Fitzroy looms into view. Storm clouds shroud the mountain, and angry, bone-chilling winds rip through the valley below. They carve out a cold, wet, and cramped ice cave at the base of the mountain to shelter from the wind and rain. They spend weeks in the cave, waiting for a break in the weather. Endless days spent in damp sleeping bags, recounting stories and playing cards. Then, late one evening, Tompkins steps out of the cave. The skies are finally clear. He turns to his fellow fun hogs.
This is it, guys, the moment we've been waiting for. Time to get ready.
The fun hogs know the clear skies won't last, so they start the ascent at 2:30 in the morning under the cover of darkness. They hammer Chouinard's steel pitons into the rock and haul themselves higher and higher. They squeeze their way up between gaps in the rock face. Their spiked crampons bite into the mountainside as they ascend. They climb for hours, their sweat-drenched cotton and wool clothes sticking to their backs. And the only time they stop is to figure out the best route to the summit. When they finally crawl onto the peak, almost 18 hours later, it's 8 p.m. and the sun is about to set. They look out triumphantly over hundreds of miles of uninhabited, arid scrubland. But then, Chouinard narrows his eyes. Another storm is already rolling in.
Don't think we can hang around for long. Look over there.
Agreed. Let's get the final shot done fast.
The team whips out their film camera and shoots footage of themselves unfurling the red Viva Los Fun Hogs banner. Then, after just 20 minutes at the top, they start their descent. After hours of rappelling down the mountain, they make camp for the night. They resume their descent at dawn. The gang battles fierce, icy storm winds, praying their rappel ropes will hold. Finally, at 11 a.m., the fun hogs make it back to their ice cave and collapse into their sleeping bags. A week later, the fun hogs are heading home. It's night, and Chouinard's at the wheel, driving the van over the rough dirt roads of Patagonia. Tompkins sits in the passenger seat, staring mournfully out the window.
It's changed.
Chouinard glances at Tompkins.
What's changed?
Patagonia. See those lights in the distance? There were no lights at all when I first came here. Civilization's closing in.
Same all over, though. I mean, remember those tropical forests we passed in Peru? The ones that had been burned to the ground to clear land for farming?
Tompkins nods.
Yeah, I do. We're screwing up the world, man. The Silent Spring's coming.
The two men go quiet, lost in thoughts about the destruction of the natural world. It's December 1968, and after 6 months away, the Fun Hogs van finally rolls into Ventura, California. Chouinard climbs out, unloads his gear, and waves goodbye to the gang. He stands and stares as the van disappears around the corner. He might be home, but he feels different. The trip to Patagonia has opened his eyes to how the natural world he loves is being degraded. From now on, he vows, he will live his life in the least environmentally harmful way possible. And that applies to his climbing hardware business, Chouinard Equipment, too. But it won't be long before his new values put his business in jeopardy. On the next episode, backpacking mania seizes America. The North Face piggybacks on winter sports, and Chouinard challenges the North Face with his own outdoor wear business, Patagonia.
Hey, Prime members, you can binge every episode of Business Wars ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
From Wondery, this is Business Wars. We should say something about the conversations in this episode. We can't know exactly what was said at the time, but this dialogue is based on our best research. Now, if you'd like to learn more about Patagonia and the North Face, we recommend the film Mountain of Storms, as well as Let My People Go Surfing by Yvon Chouinard and Conquering the North Face by Hap Klopp. I'm your host, David Brown. Tristan Donovan wrote this story. Karen Lowe is our senior producer and editor. Edited and produced by Emily Frost. Sound designed by Kyle Randall. Our executive producers are Jenny Lauer-Beckman and Marshall Louie. Created by Hernan Lopez for Wondery.
Once upon a beat. Remember the stories and fables that captured your imagination when you were young? We have a perfect podcast to bring you the stories you remember, remixed and reimagined for the kids in your life today. Yeah. Wondery and Tinkercast are bringing you a music-filled weekly party hosted by me, DJ Fuse, and my trusty turntable, Baby Scratch, spinning tales in the New Kids and Family podcast, Once Upon a Beat, where hip-hop and fables meet. Hey, grown-ups, listen to Once Upon a Beat early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. Once Upon a Beat.